Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I have with me in the studio, Annika Baird. Annika, can you introduce yourself?
My name is Annika Baird. I'm an artist in the Winding Roads tour, and among the things that I do is bookbinding, papermaking. I make some bookbinding tools, and yeah, it's kind of hard to pin down exactly what my medium is or specialty, but I guess we'll talk about that today.
So. Absolutely. And so how long have you been engaged in bookbinding and paper arts?
I guess that depends kind of when you want to put what you want to put down as the beginning. I have a memory of probably I was like 10 years old, and I remember wanting my mom to help me bind a book, and it was really important to me. I wanted it to be perfect. didn't come back to bookbinding until at least in college. So I'd say probably 10, 12 years that I've been bookbinding, and at least it as studying bookbinding or in any sort of knowledgeable way.
Yeah. So engaging kind of in earnest in that in that craft and that skill set. What do you think draws you to the idea of bookbinding? Like your 10-year-old self, you were very insistent. Like, I made this book. It has to be bound. You know, like what do you think was the impetus there?
Yeah, so interestingly, as a kid, I was really into reading. I read a lot and kind of had this romantic vision of being an author, wanting to be an author. And I think as a kid, I think that was a lot of my desire to have this book bound because I wanted it to be like a real book.
Yeah, you wanted it to feel official?
Right, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, we're not just like stapling it and folding it. We're like doing it the proper way.
Yeah, I wanted it to be right. Yeah, I wanted it to be a real book.
Yeah. And so what do you consider real when it comes to books?
Oh, well, my definition may actually have broadened.
I love that.
But, gosh, I don't know. In the book arts world, you can get into this conversation of, like, what is a book? And it just, you know, it's like when you dive deep into something and then everything becomes that thing.
Yep.
It just gets out of hand.
Yeah, it's like if there is like so much meaning that it can sometimes feel like there's no meaning at all a little bit. I really desperately want you and Michael Coppa to meet and have a conversation because he is another book artist on the Winding Roads tour. And he also has some very interesting ideas about what a book is or what it can be, right? And I would imagine that you two would have a very interesting and fruitful conversation.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So I remember talking with you about your work last year at the tour. You were at Liberty Pole Store, which is owned and operated by your brother. And are you at that same site again?
Yes.
Okay, fabulous. And I remember you telling me sort of your thesis for your tools and the way that you make paper and how you use these, how you use the raw materials from nature to make technology to make a book.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that thesis and like where, yeah. Can you, do you remember this conversation?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of what I do is I'll take these raw materials. I'll go out, you know, if you see somebody cutting weeds in a roadside ditch somewhere, like it might be me cutting plants to make to make paper. And kind of the impetus for that. So it happened when I was in grad school. I was doing I was supposed to do a bibliography mm-hmm. on something very yeah. broad, and so I decided to look into, well, what would I need to know in order to, if I was going to walk into the woods mm-hmm. with my own two hands,
yeah,
and come out the other side with a book.
That's ambitious.
You know, it's like, and a book doesn't feel, to us, a book doesn't feel like high technology, you know.
But it also doesn't feel like natural materials. It doesn't feel like raw materials right. either, right? Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but then it's really interesting when you start looking into, okay, how would I, so I need to get the paper. In order to have the paper, I would need to have, well, some sort of blade. I would need to have a mold to make the paper on, a screen with a frame. You know, I need to cut the wood mm-hmm. to make the frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd need a tub, some kind of like
vessel
for yeah. it. You know, so like you start to like trace this back and you're like, okay, well, how am I gonna get, you know, my blade?
Right.
And what you realize is here in this world, like, you know, we've got these microphones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, where did this thing come from? Like, what was all the technologies
yeah.
that it took
mm-hmm.
to get here?
Right.
And I just think that's a really fascinating question.
Absolutely.
Especially because a lot of those technologies, like one of the things I ran into was flint knapping.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually are, incidentally, there are people that do flint knapping today.
Mm-hmm.
And turned out my neighbor growing up is actually one of them.
Of course. Of course.
But it's like we've lost track of these technologies mm-hmm. that got us to the point where we can be have all the technologies that we have today. And so it's almost like we're right. kind of living in this castle in the air.
Mm.
And it's like, well, what's below this? You know,
yeah. Yeah.
All these layers. So
that's, I mean, it's a fascinating study. And I love the idea of you in grad school for book arts learning flint knapping, you know, like the fact that this assignment, this bibliography assignment led you to all of these other crafts and skill sets as a result. Because, you know, what is grad school but a place for us to just kind of blow up our understanding of the world around us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I had that experience in grad school myself where I was like, ah, and my undergrad has been rendered obsolete. Great. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Great. So when you take this study of like bringing this technology of books, because it is a technology, back to the earth, what are the materials that you're working with most frequently in your practice? You know, you talk about, you know, that person collecting weeds in the ditch could be me. Honestly, it could be a number of winding roads artists right, if we yeah, think yeah. about it. We've got willow basket makers and all yeah. sorts of people that forage. But, you know, like, what does it look like for you to use natural materials or raw materials in your practice?
Yeah, so paper making is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a few different materials I use. Dog's bane was one that I went foraging in the roadsides for quite a bit last summer. Mm. Stinging nettle mm-hmm. is a great fiber for paper making. Wild hemp.
Mm-hmm.
What else did I use? I think those were the three that I mostly did, like when I was gathering fiber last summer, those were the ones that I focused on. But then I'll do bone. I make bone tools for bookbinding. So I use bone a lot. Wood. Yeah. I also do kind of related. I started getting into brain tanning. And that was an interest. I was really trying to just like do everything from scratch. You know, I wanted to like, you need a fleshing knife to, to flesh the skin. I wanted to make my own fleshing knife. And finally I was like, my desire to make the tool to do this is preventing me from doing it. Yeah. So I'm just going to do the thing and then we'll see if I can work back.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it would be like telling somebody who wants to learn how to knit, like, okay, we're going to get you your first sheep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And like some people are absolutely 100% in, you know, and some people are like, actually, I just wanted to knit myself a hat, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious, though, for you to explain the papermaking process. I think that there is, or there can be, a little bit of mystery to that process, especially if you're using plant fibers. Well, I suppose most all paper is made from plant fibers in one form or another. Although I think you can make paper from like fabric as well.
So that's actually a plant fiber.
Yes, because it would be cotton or linen or hemp or something along those lines. Right. So, okay, take me from the ditch on the side of the road to a finished piece of paper. What does that look like?
So I was really inspired when I took my first paper making class and discovered that I was told that paper can be made from any cellulose fiber.
Okay.
So that's the building block of paper, is cellulose fiber. And so then kind of the reason, there's like Japanese fibers that are really prized. They're like, these make really great paper. And then there's like linen and cotton are kind of the big, like nice fibers for Western paper making. But I got really interested in, are there fibers that we can, like native fibers, you know, things that are growing in my backyard. And so that's why I'm, you know, collecting weeds from the ditches. So I'll take take these plants, and it's actually the inner bark that you want. So that's the fiber. So you'll find if you strip something like dog's bane, which is very closely related to milkweed, if you don't know what that is. Looks a lot, it's basically like shiny milkweed.
Okay.
And so if you cut it, you'll find the bark strips off really easily, just like peels. And so I'll peel the bark off. And I actually, so I don't have my own papermaking facility. And so what I've done is just collect a lot of fiber. And then my grad program has been really great about, they have like an alumni residency program where alumni can come back and use the facilities in the off season.
Oh, very cool.
And so I've been able to go back a couple of times and basically just blitz through my pile of fibers, you know, spend a week or 2 weeks making paper. And so some of this, I feel like I've done it one way and I want to try it a different way.
So
in the future, I think after peeling that fiber, I would like to, it's called redding. It is basically rotting.
Sure.
Where you just like break it down, you know, ferment it a little bit to kind of break down the outside bark, you know, like the green part.
Yeah. Lignin, right? You're breaking that down.
Yeah, you're breaking that down. So anything non-cellulose, really, that's in that bark. So that part I haven't done, but this is like next step. And then that's all going to get cleaned. You cook it down in an alkaline solution, like soda ash or something. And so you cook that down for a few hours, just soften it up, and then beat it Mm-hmm. And there's a piece of equipment called a Reyna beater. It's basically like a circular trough that, and then you have a paddle. It looks kind of like a paddle wheel from mm-hmm. Paddle boat. And that just pulls the fibers through. It just whips and whips and whips mm-hmm. And crushes them against the
bed plate
of this trough. And okay. so it fibrillates them. So okay. a lot of people, if you've made paper at home, you use a blender. Mm-hmm. But the blender actually cuts the fibers.
Right.
And you don't want to cut the fibers. You just want to open them up.
Right.
You want to pull them apart and open them up so you have more surface area to grab onto each other.
I made paper from recycled stuff in like elementary school.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I had a lot of fun with it because I could like take these kind of like recycled materials and then I could make them a different color, or I could add a bunch of sparkles. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you could like put stuff into the paper itself, but the paper was quite thick.
Yeah.
Is that going to be the difference in what you're describing here? Like cutting the fiber and making that pulp versus what you were describing, the F word,
the fibrillation.
Fibrillation. Yep. Is that going to be one of the things that allows a person to make a thinner, more pliant piece of paper versus something that needs that thickness to hold together?
Yeah, maybe something that needs the thickness.
Right. Because, like, I don't think that the paper that I made in elementary school could have been made thinner without just breaking apart.
Right. Yeah. Right. You'd probably, like, the fibers in the old newspaper are probably already really short.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that might be a part of it. But then, so you beat it, right? Mm-hmm. And you make this pulp. Mm-hmm. And then you put the pulp into a vat with water. It's dispersed in water. It becomes so the pulp, when you beat it, it's fairly thick. It's, mm-hmm. You know, like you could kind of grab a handful of it.
Yeah.
But then when you disperse it in the water, you have a mold that you dip into that.
Mm-hmm.
And the mold has a rim around the edge, and that keeps the fiber from all just like whooshing over the top.
Okay.
And that is a lot of what determines the thickness of your paper, is the thickness okay. of that rim. Mm. And then another thing that determines the thickness of your paper is how concentrated the pulp is in your uh-huh. vat. So if you have just like a ton of pulp in your vat,
mm-hmm.
then whatever, you know, you get a gallon of water dispersed mm-hmm. over, or a gallon of your pulp dispersed over the screen, well, depending on the concentration of the fiber yeah. in that, okay. then you're going to get a different thickness of paper.
Okay.
You know, how gotcha. Much of that is fiber, how much of it is water that's going to drain out.
And are you, like, looking at this kind of, like, water solution, and are you seeing, like, is it looking like spaghetti noodles in there, or is it like just kind of cloudy, milky?
It's kind of cloudy, milky. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like the fibers are very fine.
Yeah, you can see them. Depending, okay. you know, sometimes if you have a really highly beaten paper,
mm.
they might be really small.
Right. Okay.
But sometimes they're, you know, they're, you can,
yeah,
you can see them.
Yeah. Cool.
They're thin, right. but you know, maybe like, I mean, thinner than hair,
mm-hmm.
But generally it looks kind of milky because they're thin, but then they're also kind of swollen up with water.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So
you've got that on your form.
Yep. So that you dip your screen in, you get that layer of ooey gooey pulp on top of it, mm-hmm. and the frame around the outside, that comes off.
Yeah.
And then you can take that mold, it's just a flat surface with the pulp on top of it, and you can press that down
mm.
on, you have a pile of like damp felt, and you'll layer paper felt
okay.
And you can press that down and lift your screen off the and that like ooey gooey pulp mess of paper
mm-hmm.
will stay down there,
and that's what eventually dries into a sheet.
Yeah, and then okay. you press it after you get your pile, and you press it with like 10,000 pounds of pressure, like a Dang. Lot of pressure.
Okay.
and squeeze just as much water out of it as you can, right, with the pressure. And then at that point, it's, you can lift it up and you can like handle it. And wow, it's really, it's like soft and it's like very pleasing.
Yeah. Does it feel a little bit like fabric?
A little, yeah.
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 I mean, it just strikes me how interesting it is that, you know, so many of the same cellulose fibers that can make paper are also responsible for making the more common textiles and like fabric, like clothing fabrics, mm-hmm, that we wear, yeah, every day. I mean, it's a truly remarkable raw material.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually the history of papermaking, is Western papermaking anyway, mostly started with rag.
Mm.
So they were actually taking linen rag and beating it. So it would be made into fabric first, worn out as fabric until it couldn't be used, gotcha, anymore. Because, of course, back in, you know, 1450, you're not throwing away,
yeah, your last year's fashion.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just, wow, using, wearing it out,
mm-hmm,
and then you make it into paper.
That's fascinating. Wow. Today I learned.
There you go.
That's great. That's really great. Can you describe a little bit, one thing that I was very struck by when I visited the tour stop last year and spoke to you and was able to look at and handle and touch the paper that you had on display, was how very different all of these different kinds of paper felt in the hand. They had a different sound to them.
Mm-hmm.
When you picked them up, or, and I obviously didn't like fold any of them. but like if you were to fold these pieces of paper, they would feel very different. They would crease very differently. Mm-hmm. Can you describe that a little bit more in terms of the different plants that you use? And like, what do you think accounts for that?
You know, I feel like this is where maybe a little piece of the science of it that I'm lacking.
Oh, sure.
is I'm not really sure, like, in my mind, there's cellulose fibers, but obviously there's something different about,
yeah,
the fibers.
Right.
Because, yeah, they do behave differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if... I don't think that it really has to do with like the other materials that are present in the plant. Mm-hmm. I think it really is like the fibers are different.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to be honest, I don't really know.
That's fair.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Do you have a particular plant that is a favorite or that like has a feeling when it's in paper form that you particularly like?
I have made some nettle paper that I really like.
Mm. What about the quality of that paper is enticing?
So I found it to have the... I made a few different batches. I haven't liked them all equally.
Sure.
But the one that I liked the most was a little soft, but also had kind of a crispness to it.
Mm-hmm.
It just like felt, I don't know, it was good. It wasn't too crisp that it felt like it was gonna like crack or like it was brittle.
Sure.
But just had like a little bit of harshness to it, but also soft.
Yeah. Yeah, good sense. Balance.
And a really lovely, like buttery yellow color.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, yeah. It strikes me as interesting that I had a somewhat similar conversation with your brother Tullin on last year's podcast episode with him, where he talked about his woodworking experience and the kind of trial and error and the inquiry process that he brings to combining different kinds of wood into a single project,
mm-hmm,
right? Because that is a different kind of, I mean... Also cellulose?
Yeah.
Yeah? in a very different form.
Yeah.
All right. And all of these different woods have different hardnesses. They have different ways that they can be aged. They have different ways that they expand and contract along or against the grain of the wood, right? And so being able to skillfully bring those together into a single project means that you have to have a pretty like fine-tuned, you don't necessarily need to know the scientific reason behind, you know, why oak behaves differently than pine, but like knowing that it does and being able to apply those differences into a context successfully, that to me feels like the artistry of it. And I also think it's very interesting that you two as siblings are engaged in plant arts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, on the face of it, you would not be like, oh, these art forms are very closely related, but like, really, they are. Kind of.
Yeah, it's like I'm working with the soft stuff. He's working with the hard stuff.
Yeah, right. Well, and like the scale is different, but you know, when you get down to it, you have that, you know, you have to understand how that fiber is going to behave and study how that fiber is going to behave in order to apply it to an artistic context in a creative way.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really nice. How do you... I mean, obviously, you're at the Liberty Pole store again this year for the art tour. How is it working alongside your brother or showcasing alongside your family?
You know, it's great having a brother with a bunch of, like, power tools and stuff.
Yeah.
I end up like using his shop so much. I show up and be like, Tullin, I have a project. Can I use your... Can I use your belt sander? It's really great. And yeah, I really enjoy getting to work with him, and you know, we'll bounce ideas off each other all the time. And
yeah, that's very cool. I've maybe met a third or a fourth Baird, but do you have other siblings who are engaged in like similarly creative pursuits?
I would say most of us have some kind of creative way thing that we're pursuing.
Okay.
It not necessarily professionally, but yeah, I mean, we've all kind of got our way, just like thinking about what we're doing, and
yeah,
you know, I think curiosity is a really big part of it.
Mm-hmm. That's neat. That's really cool. Just one more question before we have to wrap up here. What does your day-to-day look like? I mean, you mentioned that like you don't have your paper-making equipment up here, right? You go to your grad school facilities, and that is a little bit of a trip because the grad program that you were in was in Iowa, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, so when you're not doing your, when you're not packing your car full of plant fibers and driving down to Iowa, how are you engaging in creative practice?
Yeah, so it really depends. You know, I think that a lot of the way that I pursue my practice, like I do a lot of problem solving. It's like, okay, I need this thing, so I'm going to make it happen. And so a lot of it is, I teach classes with the Driftless Folk School.
Oh, very cool.
So that's some of it also kind of drives, like, what do I need for my class? And then I can make that happen.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of, events where I'll just take stuff to events. So I have something, I'll be up in Stevens Point here in a couple weeks, and was just thinking about, man, people like to buy bone tools I don't have many bone tools left because people have bought them all. So I better make some bone tools.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll be dropping by Tullin's store, you know, using some of his tools, make my bone tools. But yeah, I mean, it also depends on the season. Like, you know, if I do brain tanning, well, you know, I come by deer hides often in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So, you know, you just sort of like, okay, that's what I'm doing now.
That's what I'm doing this season. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, gathering weeds for paper. It's like, well, I'm not going to do that in January.
Yeah.
Oh, probably not. I actually did one time. I went out. but, you know, they're mostly available, you know, sometime like, you know, mid to late summer. And mm-hmm. So that's when I'm going to go look for weeds. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, I wanted to just reiterate that Annika is going to be at Liberty Pole Store during the Winding Roads Art Tour. And you are also hosting a workshop.
I am, yes.
So this is a new thing that the Winding Roads Art Tour is offering this year. There are two artists on the tour that are offering workshops. So this is in addition to whatever you might be wanting to see or do on the tour weekend. Not only can you purchase and view art created by all of the wonderful artists on the tour, you now have the opportunity to learn some of the skills that these artists use in their creative practice and take something home that you yourself have made. Can you tell us a little bit about that workshop?
Yeah. So now I have to remember which there's two bookbinding styles. I believe that the workshop I'm offering is in Coptic.
I think that's right.
Yeah, yes. This is a Coptic. It's also called chain stitch. Actually, the oldest known codex book form.
Very cool.
So this was, you know, the first time that information appeared in a book form that you could fit to page one or page 641.
Wow.
This is how it was made. You know, stone tablets, scroll, Coptic book. So we're going to be doing that. The Coptic is a really lovely little book. It's a non-adhesive structure,
mm-hmm.
So it's completely sewn.
Okay.
And the spine, it's a cool one. The spine is actually visible. It's like an exposed spine,
sure.
It's called. And so you can actually see the sewing makes this really lovely kind of like almost braid pattern on the back. And so you
beautiful.
Can see that exposed
sewing
when the book is finished, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. Very cool. So if you would like to register for Annika's workshop, you can do so at the Winding Roads website. We also have a link to that in our social media pages, Instagram especially. And I believe you can register until the beginning of June. Definitely take advantage of this opportunity. This is something new that we're trying here for the 10th anniversary of the tour. And we hope to have more workshops to be offered in future years as well. So thank you so much for agreeing to kind of like jump on the bandwagon and be an early adopter for the workshops.
Yeah.
We're very excited to try this out this year. And thank you as well for just being an artist on the tour.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And thanks for being here in the studio today.
Yeah, it's good talking with you, Catherine. Thank you.